I'm Michael Brennis, and this is the Showbiz Roundup. On his new record, Deep Breath, Kenny Reichert engages a long-standing group of stalwart collaborators to showcase his growth as a composer, bandleader, and guitarist over the nearly 9 years since his previous outing as leader. My guest today is Kenny Reichert, who will be at North Street Cabaret April 21st. Kenny, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You have a new record coming out on Shifting Paradigm. It's called Deep Breath. What can you tell us about the new recording?
Yeah, so this new record was kind of a while in the coming, or took a while for it to come to fruition. The last record I did as a leader was in 2014, actually, and it came out in 2015. And kind of in between, I moved to London and was in Berlin, and now recently, due to the pandemic, came back to Chicago. And when I got back to Chicago, I had a monthly gig in Milwaukee and was kind of playing around with different musicians, kind of just getting a feel for, you know, the scene and what that was all about. And yeah, and when so the record, the musicians on the record are Tony Barba, who actually lives in Madison, and he played soprano, saxophone, tenor, and bass clarinet, and John Christensen, also a Madison local, and Devin Popka, and then Alyssa Allgood, who's a vocalist here in Chicago with me. And yeah, we had a really good connection when we played. And so we kind of kept that going, and I started bringing in music, and they were just doing, you know, interpreting the music really well. And we had a really good connection. And so I was very fortunate that last year I actually received a grant from the Lumen Arts Cultural Foundation, which is a foundation here in Chicago. And so that kind of made the possibility of recording much more real. And from that point on, you know, I think the ensemble got a little bit more serious about, like, hey, we're going to record a project, and kind of made it happen. So, yeah.
You enlisted Tony Barba, John Christensen, Devin Drobka, and as you mentioned, Alyssa Allgood sings on two of the songs. Is this the same group you're going to be bringing to North Street?
Unfortunately, no. Tony is on tour a lot of the year now with an artist, Father John Misty. And he will unfortunately be out of town when we are coming. So Leonard Simpson, who's a fantastic alto saxophonist here in Chicago, is going to be playing with us that night. And we'll just be doing quartet.
Yeah, we've seen his name more and more, I think, these days. So that'll be really cool.
He's really a fantastic musician. He's also my neighbor. I live above him. But he's from Milwaukee originally as well. So we've known each other for a long time. And he's making some pretty awesome waves here in Chicago with his own band. And he plays with Kurt Elling and Sarah Gazarek some. And so he's a really phenomenal musician. And I'm really excited to have him with us.
So convenient that you guys are neighbors.
Sometimes just knock on his window like, hey, man, I'm available for this date.
That's probably better than texting and stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I try to, you know, obviously as musicians, you have a personal relationship and a professional relationship. And, you know, I try to not blur those lines too much because, you know, it can get a little messy sometimes. But yeah, I mean, we see each other all the time, so it's fine, you know.
So you mentioned this is your second jazz release as a leader. You have some other recordings that we can talk about, but did you feel like you had any lessons learned from your first release, and what did you want to do differently on this record?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the first release, I was really young. I think I'm just going to throw it out. I have no idea to be exact, but I was like 20 or 21 when we did the record. And I was lucky. I was living in Milwaukee at the time, and I had a monthly gig at the Jazz Estate on a Monday night. So it was with Devin again, John again, and Russ Johnson on trumpet. And I had no idea what I was doing. I just had all these tunes, and like one day I was like, "Hey guys, can we record a record?" And they were like, "Sure." And so I booked studio time and like all this stuff. But I remember Devin one time calling me and being like, "Hey man, you realize you like have to pay us to do this, right?" It was like, kind of, like I was very green. I didn't even know mastering was a thing. So there was that. That was very much a trial by fire, but a very good experience nonetheless of really putting all that together and doing that project. So since then, I've released several records with a duo project I have with my wife called Sara and Kenny, and that was kind of my main thing while we were over in Europe. And I learned a lot from putting records out and what goes into making a record and presenting it kind of that way. So I had a lot of more experience that I was able to bring to this to this time around. And obviously having the resources from the grant made things a lot easier because I was able to make a lot of calculated decisions ahead of time that I think you obviously create a budget and like you like want to understand every step of the process and how you're going to make the music happen. And being able to approach everything with a much more calculated and also stress-free kind of experience was really nice. Being able to book multiple days in a studio is really great as well. I think it takes a lot of pressure off everyone to like feel like you need to like nail it in one take. And surprisingly enough, I think as a result of that, most of the tunes were just one take, which really felt good, to kind of like do it and be like, yeah, I don't really think it's going to get much better than that. So, it feels good. But I think just knowing that, if you need to, you can come back tomorrow and do it really, really makes a difference. I don't, in the world of jazz, finances can sometimes be tricky. So, I was very lucky to be able to approach it this time around from that perspective.
Yeah, well, first takes, that's pretty impressive. What'd you guys do the second day?
There were two, oh gosh, I can't remember. I think there were two tunes that we did a couple more takes of, and I don't remember which day we kept. I kind of blind I did a blind comparison at the end to see, so I wouldn't be biased of like, oh, I think it's better, because I think sometimes you feel like, oh, this is the take, and then you go back and listen, you're like, eh, I don't know about that one. Maybe this other one is the song. But yeah, the rest of the day, actually, then I mixed. And we recorded the project in Madison as well at Blast House Studios with Landon Arkins. And he was just fantastic the whole time through. Everything sounded great. He was very quick, very open to our feedback. And yeah, and we were able to pretty much get a pretty solid mix out from the rest of the day, which was kind of a fun thing to go in and just be like, oh, we're gonna do a record, and then to have it kind of like mixed in your hand at the end of day two was a pretty cool feeling. But I should say though, we did play three shows leading up to that date, so on consecutive days. So we did like a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday thing, and then went to the studio on Saturday. So it wasn't like we just showed up. There was some, obviously, a year of playing together leading up to it, and then some shows the week of to kind of tighten everything and feel good about where everything was. So,
It sounds good. You guys were loosened up and ready to go.
yeah.
And then that sort of mixing on the second day and leaving with a rough, that's sort of like the classic jazz recording workflow, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have to give credit to the band. They're phenomenal musicians. They're really receptive to my vision. And also Landon, it's like you show up at a studio and everything's set up and ready to roll at the time that you show up. It just, it makes everything really easy. So, there's a lot of steps in the process and a lot of things that can go a myriad of ways. So I was very lucky to work with great musicians and great engineers, and just makes it easy to do the thing, I guess.
You mentioned your duo project. What else can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I do a lot of different things, and this project specifically is a duo project I have with my wife. She is a classical guitarist from Italy. Her name's Sara Di Polito, and she's also a singer-songwriter. So this project is kind of a combination of our two worlds. We both play guitar. I play electric, and she plays nylon string, and we both sing. And it's kind of an original songwriter project that we started in 2015, I believe. And Yeah, I think 2015. And it's kind of funny because we actually had kind of started dating and we were like, we're not gonna, bring our musical worlds together because sometimes that can get messy. And if you start working together and then it doesn't work out, and then it gets really messy. But it just kind of happened because, we really liked playing music together and it was a very different thing, obviously coming from very different musical traditions to try to find common ground and to incorporate elements that were important to us. And so yeah, we've been doing that for a period of time. It was pretty much our full-time job until the pandemic, which we were living in London and then we were living in Berlin. And during most of the year, we were actually traveling around U.S. and Europe, playing concerts, and which is really was phenomenal. And I'm very happy that we got to do that. A lot of this is like DIY touring, not like stadiums, none of that. It was like house concerts and small venues, and a lot of driving ourselves everywhere. And it was phenomenal. But the pandemic was really hard. Which is kind of how we ended up back in Chicago because Germany hard locked down, and we had obviously invested so much of our time in only performing that when that dried up very quickly, we had to kind of rethink of, how we were going to structure our lives. But also in some ways it was a blessing in disguise because when you're just doing all these things and life happens from A to B and you're kind of just going down this path where you're making choices and you're living the result of those choices that you make. It was the first time I really had time to stop and kind of reflect on my life a little bit and be like, whoa, how did I get here? I'm somehow living in Germany now and like travel around all the time and play music. And when you're doing it that often, it's kind of easy to take it for granted, I think, and to not always like have time to really digest all the experiences you're having. And so that was really kind of a, like I said, a blessing in disguise, because then I had time to really reflect on a lot of this stuff. And actually, the music for Deep Breath, most of the music that is on that album, I wrote after coming back to Chicago and really reflecting on a lot of these experiences that I had. So in a lot of ways, it's all kind of tied together. From all of that, I guess. So.
Well, that's a really positive way to look at sort of the destruction of your career, like a lot of people endured during the pandemic. So kudos for that.
Well, I mean, it was hard, I'm not gonna lie. There were, but it was also, well, you're here, so what are you gonna do with it? I think for me, what I realized for myself at least was the fragility, especially because being a musician is already such a hustle. Like you really have to be a go-getter, and nobody's, well, it's not nobody, but you really have to find a way to make your living, month to month, year to year, and it never stops. What I realized for myself was by putting all my eggs in one basket, like only focusing on performing. It's kind of a fragile thing, and I have to say, when I started out, I never thought a global pandemic would be what, kind of, but here we are. So what are you going to do with it, in turn, I focused a lot more on composing and had a chance to, develop more of my teaching, and I'm actually finishing a grad school degree right now, which is why we came back to Chicago. And yeah, so I was able to pivot in a lot of different ways.
So you mentioned grad school. I know you're in school at DePaul. Once that wraps up, do you have plans to go back to Europe? Or are you going to stick around Chicago, Milwaukee? What's the plan?
It's kind of all up in the air right now. I'm not entirely sure. I really like Chicago. I think Chicago is a really amazing place to be a jazz musician specifically. There's an unbelievable amount of good music happening here. You have easy access to Milwaukee, easy access to Madison. Minneapolis is not that far away. And I'm sure, as you know, a lot of musicians between Madison and Milwaukee and Chicago kind of, are constantly moving between the three cities. So there's a lot of really, it's just a really inspiring place. It's not crippling expensive. It's, I get to see great music all the time. I get to, I'm from Wisconsin originally, so I'm close to family, which is nice. And yeah, but I'm not entirely sure at the moment. There's some possibilities that may lead us other places, but nothing is for sure yet. And if those don't come to fruition, Chicago is very much a place that I would enjoy to continue living.
It's not a bad position to be in, to be flexible and to follow the greener grass, so to speak, you know.
Yeah, it's I've done it a lot over the last couple of years, so it's restarting is always really exciting and really refreshing, and because you get a chance to kind of see everything from a different perspective, and kind of like, you know, especially when you're involved moving countries, you know, it's a, such a deep reset that you really have to like kind of figure out who you are again every time. But it's also really nice to have community around you. And especially as a jazz musician, I think that's like a really big part of our profession, is, you know, having just a wide network of musicians that you interact with, that you perform with, that you go see, that you just hang out with. And you can learn so much about so many different styles of music, so many different ways of playing. Sometimes you like go see a friend playing, you're like, wow, I never thought of doing that on the guitar before. That's a great idea. I'm stealing that, you know? but, and that takes time too. You know, it's not like that happens overnight. That's not that happens in a year. It happens over the course of several years, and like relationships, that's kind of essentially what they are. So, you know, those things can be a little tricky if you're constantly resetting, which is something that I feel like I've been doing a little bit, but again, I wouldn't do anything differently, but it's also nice to plant your feet sometimes too and grow in different ways.
During your early days in Brookfield, you studied with Roger Brotherhood, who has taught scores of guitarists in the Milwaukee and Madison areas over the last, I would say, almost 50 years. He taught the first person I ever played music with when I was a kid, and I even studied with him for 5 years on guitar. What did you learn from Roger, and was he instrumental at all in your desire to pursue guitar?
Absolutely. Roger... Oh man, Raj. I always called him Raj. He was phenomenal. I didn't really study jazz prior to him. And so I grew up playing classical piano and then started playing guitar because I had, in middle school, I had some friends who were very into music, but everything I was doing was rock. You know, I was just pretty much a straight rock player and just loved, you know, that music and a lot of, you know, stuff closely associated with it. And the high school I went to, Brookfield Central, had a jazz band that was really good. And I didn't get in my first year to either band. And so I went and talked to the teacher. His name's Jason Gillette. And he was like, oh, man, you need to go study with Raj. Like, I'll give you his number. And, like, you know, if you really want to do this, like, go study with him and we'll talk next year. So I went and I started hanging out with him. And, man, he was... really just a phenomenal teacher, because so thorough. I had a really good understanding, but really passionate about the music. Also really strict with me. You know, so he was really good because he didn't really tolerate any BS. But there'd be, I was his last lesson of the night, and sometimes, I can't remember, we'd start at like 7:30 or 8, or I honestly don't remember, but like I would be there sometimes for like 2.5 hours or like 3 hours, because he'd be like, we'd do our lesson, then he'd be like, oh man, I have this like bootleg recording of Paul Ballenbach playing a gig, and like, are you up to anything now? And like, we'd be sitting there for another hour watching Paul Ballenbach play and like talking about it, and like, this was like almost every single week. So his, I think, enthusiasm and just willingness to share his time well beyond what he really needed to was kind of infectious for me. And I think a lot of ways very instrumental to developing my love for guitar and jazz to the extent that I did. I also think Jason Gillette was very instrumental in my early development as a jazz musician, because he was very passionate about it too and took the band around. We'd go to like Eau Claire and you know, various festivals around the U.S. or the Midwest, sorry. And or actually, I think we went out to New York once too. But like, he was just really, you know, all about jazz music as well. And that was very infectious and kind of helped direct me to, you know, MISO, which is the Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra Jazz Program. And then I was also at the Wisconsin Conservatory for a little bit, which is where I met Leonard initially. And so, yeah, it's I was fortunate to have some people early in my life that kind of spun me that way. But Raj was definitely a huge part. Yeah,
I had the same experience, because when I studied with him, I mean, I picked up the guitar a little later in life. I'm a drummer. I was fortunate enough to be able to have a lesson during the day. And he, I don't know if he didn't have back-to-back lessons or whatever, but you're right. It was often... an hour and a half, 2 hours. Eventually I'd be like, you know, I got to go pick up my kids. And what a passionate passionate guy and such a great teacher.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, he's taught a lot of people. He's taught a lot of my friends. Like, when I had a lot of friends be like, who should I study with? I'd be like, go to Raj. And he, you know, is one of those teachers that you can see his lasting impact on the music scene in Milwaukee and Madison, because he's just taught so many people and inspired so many people to pursue music.
You're also involved in the world of music licensing, as I understand it. Tell us more about how that works and how successful you've been in that field.
Yeah, that's a very different way of making music, and something I'm very grateful for, because I actually got involved in this kind of by chance, because there's a great studio musician who mixed my first record, and he's recorded and mixed almost everything Sara and I have done together. And his name is Kyle White. And he's based in Milwaukee. He's the place he's at used to be called Burst Collective, and I believe it's called Wire and Vice now. But it's in Wauwatosa. And when we were recording our record Heartless, we needed a lot of studio time. And we were kind of like living in London at the time, and we were in and out. And then there was a period of time where we were here for a lot. And, you know, paying by the hour for that amount of studio time can be really tricky. And Kyle was involved a lot in a lot of various music licensing. So he saw that we were writing a lot of music, and, you know, he needed a lot of music. So he was like, hey, what if we like start collaborating and doing some of this licensing stuff together, and we can kind of like split studio days. Then as a result of like first half, we like work on your record, and second half, we work on music licensing. And so that's how we got involved. And then I, you know, started doing it a lot long distance with him, and have kind of, we've been pretty, over the past year, I haven't been super actively doing it, but prior to that, we were putting out several records a year. And it's really interesting, because a lot of that type of music writing is you're writing in the style of another, you know, let's say musician, or kind of a genre, loosely termed, or maybe like you identify some characteristic elements of a band and you try to write in the style of that. So it's very challenging, but it's also a great writing exercise, because a lot of it is like just write a song. Like, you need to have a song written, recorded, and arranged in a day easily. And in the beginning, that's really hard. It's like a lot of work. And then with each song, you get a little faster and you get a little bit better, and you start being able to very quickly be like, oh, here's a chord progression, here's a melody. What's hard is trying to, you know, mimic the nuances of certain styles of playing. And I realized very quickly my limitations within that. I'm very good at like folk music, a lot of piano music, stuff that's maybe, you know, singer-songwriter kind of elements. When it starts to get into maybe like punk music or other elements that are a little bit heavier, I wasn't really naturally very good at that. That required a lot more work. But yeah, and the tricky thing about that world, though, is it's changed a lot since especially the past couple decades, where, you know, there used to be like full-time writers on staff of certain studios or certain, and there are some of these places that still exist, but they're much, you know, they're a lot smaller and usually a lot less common. And so a lot of writers, you know, you write songs, you basically sell them to companies, and you make royalties on the back end of that. And sometimes it can be really good, and sometimes it can be really inconsistent. So it's nice, because it's gotten to the point that every time ASCAP checks come around, we're, you know, get nice checks, but it's really variable. It's not to the point that I would ever like count on it. But some people who have really invested a lot in that field, like, you can do very well. But you have to be very good at consistently putting out a lot of music. So if you're into like, if you're writing and you're a multi-instrumentalist and you have good access to a studio and you can invest a lot of time into that, you know, it's a really cool way to make a living. But I think for me, my biggest takeaways have been like, it really helped my songwriting, because it just got a lot quicker at being able to write a song and not feel so attached to it. You know, I think when I first started writing music, every song I wrote was so precious to me. And I was like, every song needs to be like, it's an artistic statement. Like, yes, this is my baby, right? But now that I've probably written, I don't know, 500, 600 songs, maybe more in my life, I think like really what I try to do is just write a song and just make sure I can get it down on paper or get it to the point that it could be performed and not think about it really till after I'm done. And then maybe after I'm done, I can go like, I'll probably never play that, you know, like I'll just tuck that away in my composition folder and like whatever. And other times, you know, like maybe 6 months go by and you like revisit it and you're like, oh, but if I changed these things or if I arranged it in this way, like now this could be a song that I actually perform. And so indirectly, that type of work has had a huge influence on my compositional output, but it's also a line of work, and there are some people who do it exceptionally well, and Kyle is one of those people who's just very flexible, can do a lot of different stuff. He plays every instrument very well, and so he can just sit there and produce whole records by himself, and it's pretty impressive.
You touched on this a little bit, but I'm curious, is it a challenge then to say, well, this is a Kenny Reichert song, I'm going to keep this one for me, versus, you know, okay, this one, I can license this one, that I'll let this one go. This one isn't as, you know, this one isn't an artistic statement that I want to perform necessarily. Or then down the line, do you go, oh, well, I already licensed that idea, so I really can't use that for my own stuff?
Yeah, well, once you sign a contract with a company, you are basically handing over the rights to that song. So once the contract has been signed, it's gone. But one of the awesome parts about working with Kyle was that we pretty much had an agreement that if I ever like wrote a song and a week went by and I was like, nah, I want to keep that one, he'd be like, great, write me another one, you know? And that was kind of, so there were a couple times I've done that, but I also feel like a lot of my original music projects in general are a little bit more, how do I say this? They're like very cross genre in a certain sense and very difficult to license. So whereas license, it's like they want like a very definable oftentimes kind of thing. And a lot of the music that I feel like I'm really artistically invested in tends to not be that way. So there isn't a lot of overlap between that, but it has happened. There have been a couple songs that Sarah and I took back, definitely, and a couple maybe that I wish I'd kept, but you know, then whenever that happens, I go, all right, just write another one, you know. There's a lot of music out there and, you know, a lot of music to be written, so I try not to get too caught up about it or think too much about it.
Kenny Reichert, thanks so much for stopping by the Showbiz Roundup today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
That's it for this edition of the Showbiz Roundup. Our theme music is a composition by me, performed by Outside the Sphere, an experimental duo consisting of Tony Barba and myself, with special guest Sebastian Brennis on trombone. If you'd like more information about this show or any of the past or future shows presented by Bluestem Jazz, you can head over to bluestemjazz.org, and you can follow my doings or be in touch via rattletickbuzz.com. Catch you later.